got a job. Billy's got prospects. He's bona fide. What are you?
You can't marry him.
Why can't I am and I will.
This gentleman bothering you?
Well, you can't marry my wife.
And stay out of the Woolworth.
To get back to his wife and kids, Ulysses Everett McGill would do anything.
Hey, any boy, Smitty.
He was about to get off on the wrong track.
Who elected you leader of this outfit?
Well, Pete, I figured it should be the one with the capacity for abstract thought.
Boys, just stick with me.
Man, we're in a tight spot.
Believe me, I got a plan. I can get my wife back and we can get out of here.
Okay, I'm with you fellas.
Ain't you gonna introduce us, Pete?
I've seen him first!
Pete! Them sirens loved him up and turned him into a horny toad.
You two are just dumber than a bag of hammers.
Allow me to introduce myself. Big Dan, Toot Corp.
Hey, what line of work you in, George?
Come and get me, Captain Fox!
Oh, George, not the livestock.
Wait a minute. Since we've been following your lead, we got nothing but trouble.
You have eluded me
for the last time.
I got the answers. I'm bona fide.
Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you wear.
George Clooney, John Turturro, Holly Hunter, and John Goodman star in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Audio Describe, Sunday afternoon at 1 on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio's Sunday Movie Matinee.
You ever been with a woman? I gotta get the family farm back before I can start thinking about that.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 40 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 30s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 40s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 11 a.m.
Welcome to the Western Magazine Hour. Stories and articles about the American West. Produced at the Recording Library of West Texas. Your narrator is Jack.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading some articles from the January 2023 issue of Cowboys and Indians magazine. George Strait. Catching up with country music's king about life at home, new recordings, and his longing to play live again. By Hunter Hawk. The old needs no introduction trope comes to mind when thinking of George Strait, the consistently brilliant troubadour who has been comfortable at the top of country music's heap for the better part of four decades. It certainly applies when thinking of how enthusiastically CMI readers have responded to Strait over time. He's graced five covers since the magazine's birth 30 years ago, when Pure Country was giving the singer a much-deserved Hollywood boost. To further speak to of his longevity, it's been 10 years since Strait's historic Cowboy Rides Away tour had legions of fans crying into their beers. Thankfully, the end of touring didn't mean the end, period. In the last decade, the Texas legend has expanded his recorded catalog, performed in-demand annual concerts at Wrangler NFR and in other arenas, and launched his Codico I-530 premium tequila brand. He's welcomed a second grandchild of the family and stayed active in his outdoor pursuits, including riding, roping, hunting, fishing, and golf. So the first question we had for Strait when he was gracious enough to allow us a new interview was this. What's the secret to longevity? We expected a thoughtful response, and that's what we got. Staying focused and believing that what you're doing is good is important. You have to believe in yourself, he says. I always felt like I knew what worked for me and what didn't. That might not be the key to longevity, but who can honestly even say what might be? I just always knew that I wanted a career like Merle Haggard or George Jones. I wanted to still be relevant when I got older. Those guys are still relevant and always will be in my book. Straight may never toot his own horn, but he absolutely shares the same glorified status as his musical heroes. He is and always will be a fixture in his fans' lives. The music itself is worthy of such devotion, but the man behind it also has a lot of wisdom to impart. A recent chat with Strait touches on his life at home and what brings him joy these days. Here's the exciting part. He still longs to take the stage and plans to do so in a string of stadium concerts this spring and fall. He also lets slip that he's beginning to plan his new album. Cowboys and Indians. Have you ever given any thought to writing a memoir or making a movie about your own life and career? George Strait. I have given serious thought to a documentary, although I tend to procrastinate these days. So right now, a thought is all it is. I've not thought about a movie, though. We always chuckle a little when we hear about the Yeehaw agenda, the latest rise in mainstream popularity of country music, Western movies, and TV shows, cowboy and cowgirl style. But there have been crossover cultural moments at many points over the years. You've certainly experienced them time and again. What's your take on why Western culture continues to draw new generations? Well, the pendulum continues to swing, doesn't it? When I got signed in 1981, country music was coming out of a crossover craze. Crossing over, for those that might not know, means having a country record that is also getting played on the pop stations. There was even a TV show called Pop Goes the Country. The songs obviously got heard by more people and sold more records, so record labels loved it and pushed it. It started to change around 1981, though, and I was lucky enough to get signed during that time. Pendulum thing. Time is everything. I've always loved Western movies. The Outlaw Josie Wales is one of my all-time favorites. The Western Way of Life is a good one, and I think people just want to experience that in some way. Movies may be the only way some people get to do that. Have you ever watched Yellowstone or 1883? For some reason, it is strange to imagine you sitting and staring at a television. Well, I've seen both and thought they were great. Jim and Faith were outstanding in 1883, and of course, Kevin Costner is always great. I watch TV a lot, believe it or not. When I'm in the house and there's a TV in the room, it's on. Fans are always interested in what kinds of things you get into when you aren't on stage in front of them. I've never loved the term hobby, but how else do you like to spend your time away from the bright lights these days? Oh, I love to be outside. I play a lot of golf now, if the weather's good. I'm usually doing that. I just came back from a golf trip to Scotland, and it was amazing. Prestwick is my favorite course, other than the old course at St. Andrews. I still fish and hunt. I think I've got another Africa trip in my future, and hopefully I'll catch a few more marlin somewhere down the road. I went out and rode my favorite rope horse, Joker, on my birthday. He's still in pretty good shape for his age. What's new in the world of Codigo, and what's something, if anything, that has surprised you about getting into the premium spirits business? Codigo is really taking off. It's becoming a top-selling tequila in a very competitive market. The cream always rises to the top, as they say. What's been surprising about the whole thing has been how hard it actually is to get a product like this into the stores. There's only so much shelf space, and there are so many tequilas out there competing for that space. My saying is, if it's not your favorite, you haven't tried it. I really believe that, so please try it. You'll see. We started drinking it when it had no name and was just in random bottles. This went on for several years before we named it Codigo I-530 and introduced it to the world. It's been fun to watch it grow. When you think about recording music and identifying songs for a new project, what kinds of lyrics reach out and grab you? Do you look first for unique storytelling, or are you more about a sonic mood or overall message? I like making records and plan on doing another one soon. I'm narrowing down my song choices now. I've always said I'm a melody guy. A great melody can sing a song the best. A great lyric with a lousy melody, maybe not so much, but a great lyric along with a great melody is obviously what you're looking to create. That's why I've had such a great relationship with Dean Dillon. I think he's the best melody guy in the business. His lyrics are great as well, so there you go. There's no specific message or mood that I'll be shooting for. I just want to put together a bunch of good songs that stand out individually. Chances to see you live are few and further between, by design, after the historic farewell tour ended in 2014. Does that mean taking a stage now all the more precious to you? Are there other ways that you're performing live differently than you did before? It really does. It's kind of a catch-22 situation for me. I miss it sometimes, but I know if I went hard like I used to, then I would wind up burning myself out. I think I'm on the right pace now, but I do love playing live shows. There's nothing like it, and words can't describe the feeling you get playing for a big audience. I've got great fans, and I count my blessings that I'm still able to do that. I'm going to do some stadiums with Chris Stapleton this year, and I can't wait for that. I love doing shows with Chris. He's such a huge talent and a really genuine, down-to-earth person. Your son has proven himself to be a great songwriter. Are you seeing any other musical talents develop in your family? Do you tend to encourage it with your grandchildren? It's been great to see Bubba get into songwriting, guitar, and performing. I love writing with him, and we'll have some new things for the next record. My grandson played drums for a while, and we'll probably go back to it at some point, but right now it's baseball for him, plus hunting and fishing. I've heard a little singing from time to time from my granddaughter. She sounded pretty good. It's way too early to predict something like that, but I'll encourage them in whatever it is they decide to do. Here's a schedule of some spring and fall stadium shows that George Strait will be performing. May 6th, State Farm Stadium in Glendale, Arizona. June 3rd, American Family Field in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. June 17th, Lumen Field in Seattle, Washington. June 24th, Empower Field at Mount Mile High Stadium in Denver. July 29th, Nissan Stadium in Nashville, Tennessee. And August 5th, Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Florida. A guy, a horse, a hat, a sunset. Inspired by New Mexico, French-American painter Marc Maggiore is taking the Western art world by storm and forging his own Taos Society 2.0 by Wolf Schneider. He's been called the most important Western artist alive, and it's been said that he may well be the best Western artist ever. Though he only began painting Western art in 2014, his works have certainly blown up in the art world, where buyers mostly have to go through auctions and luck-of-the-draw sales to purchase a piece. At only 45, Marc Maggiore is a one-of-a-kind phenom. Even before he was a Western artist, Maggiore was a rock star. A bona fide rock star, that is, having been the lead vocalist for the French metal band Plomo in his 20s. He's still comfortable in the spotlight, recently modeling for Italian menswear line Giliva Heritage. And he's the star of his own Instagram account, where he attracted more than 350,000 followers with his posts of his remarkable photorealist paintings, along with videos of himself painting on plein air at the Grand Canyon with his stylish shoulder-length hair, and deeply personal statements like his anniversary message to his wife, designer Patricia Lathanhock, in which he declared, "There was nothing I could do to stop this whirlwind magnetic attraction that was gluing us to one another." In life and art, Majority is a romanticist. He's also another inventive Gemini, which makes him pretty much at home wherever he goes, including his adopted home of Taos, New Mexico. His paintings are masterful works of cowboys and Indians on horseback in the Southwest, characters depicted on big canvases with even bigger narrative storylines visually extending for miles. The settings are mostly mountain terrain that could be the American West of the 1800s, 1900s, or today. The paintings seem to be impressively realistic, with the backgrounds and foregrounds featuring decisively colored brushstrokes. The right color does the work. You take it as what it is if the color is right, said Majority, who gravitates toward warmer cinematic colors. Where he often gets particularly dramatic is with his textured, muscled-up, billowing clouds, which can be white, yellow, orange, pink, you name it. Gazing on one of his scenes, you somehow feel the weather swirling around the horseback riders as they pick their way down a mountainside, calmly cross a field, or splash through a foamy mountain stream. And Majority painting tends to conjure freedom and composure within that freedom. There are bluish nocturnes and cold weather scenes, too. Majority has done most of those since moving to Taos in 2020. He lives there with Lathanhock and their daughter Wilderness on a five-acre property. He painted in Joseph Henry Sharp's venerable studio at the Taos Sharp Historic Site while having his house's garage rebuilt into a 700-square-foot painting studio. Now that studio has 16-foot ceilings and a massive northeast-facing window that peers out at the Sagra de Cristo Mountains. Majority paints while standing at an easel by that window, surrounded by canvases, brushes, art and history books, and a study area with club chairs, a coffee table, and a Chesterfield couch. Navajo rugs are everywhere. So is Western gear. The gear is essential since Majority's paintings all begin with reference photos that he stages and shoots on location. He develops a concept, determines the location, supplies the guard, and directs the models and horses. His smaller artworks, which might be 11 by 14 or 24 by 30, usually take a couple of weeks once he begins painting. Larger ones, typically 6 by 40 or 50 by 50, might take a month. The paintings have been selling for $30,000 to $150,000, with prices on the upswing. His work is also in museums, including the Briscoe Western Art Museum, Itjorg Museum of American Indians and Western Art, and Autry Museum of the American West. Growing up in Fontainebleau, France, on the outskirts of Paris, the son of highly cultured parents, Majority always dreamed of America, the cowboys, the westerns, the skateboarding, the sneakers. He first visited on a road trip from New York to California at age 15. Back in Paris, he formally trained in drawing at the Académie Julian, the famed art school that members of the Taos Society of Artists, like Bert Phillips, Ernest Bloemanson, and Joseph Sharp, had attended generations before, as had artists as diverse as Matisse, Rivera, and Thomas Hart Benton. While in art school, Majority's band got a record deal. That's when he turned rock star and also started creating their album covers and directing their music videos. Eventually, he landed in Los Angeles. The lead singer, artist, collector of Western clothes, was now a 30-something in search of his next career. He married Lathanhock. It was his second marriage, and on a visit to Oklahoma City, his new father-in-law clocked the cowboy hat Majority wore and suggested he might like to visit the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum. And that's where Majority found his future. We talked with him about that epiphany, his life in Taos, and the art that binds his bio together. You invented yourself after visiting the famous Cowboy Museum in Oklahoma. What about it struck you so profoundly? When I was in Oklahoma and went to the museum, I realized there was a Western form of art. I mean, I might see a Remington painting sometime, but I was really into music. I left the museum and went to a newsstand. I saw a magazine showing that art. I realized, wow, that's a whole scene for people doing this. I wanted to try myself at this. I wanted to paint a cowboy on a horse. I really had a feeling for it. I bought stuff and started painting. I told my wife, I want to start painting. So we gave up our little house in L.A. and moved to Arizona. I started painting in the back of my mother-in-law's house. I got a model friend in Kingman, Arizona, who had horses. I opened my Instagram account. It was the end of 2013. You already looked the part. I have a big love for clothing, even when I was skateboarding. I always liked the cool clothes. When I came to America, I started collecting all the cool clothing. When I saw those paintings, the denim, the textures, the boots, the chaps, it was exciting to my eyes as the landscapes. I put myself out there in Kingman in order to have time to paint. I had a lot on my shoulders. From another country, we had to pay child support. We lived on a small budget for a while. But I'm not going to complain because I got into galleries very fast. By the summer of 2014, he was making money at galleries and didn't have to do anything else. Cowboy started following me on Instagram, but some of you took to task. Yeah, that's for sure. Some hardcore cowboys probably don't approve of me because I'm not a cowboy myself. And there is this thing about Western art where some Western painters are actual cowboys, and good for them. But it's definitely not me. I have a completely different background. I give it an edge that makes it unique because of my background. Some understand me and some don't, and that's fine. It's all good. My followers understand me. What made you move to Taos? I came here in 2014 with my wife. I was struck by everything. There was something incredible about the whole place. We kept coming to take photos and to just be here and revisit what it must have felt like 100 years ago. We ended up deciding to buy a house here. I wanted to get more into the Native American culture, especially the Pueblo, because I was very fascinated by it. I refused before being here to actually paint Native Americans just from reference photos that were not mine. I wanted to meet them and really get into it before I was doing it, so that's what I did. Silversmith Lyle Wright models for you on horseback in paintings like Sacred Sunset, where he's on the white horse. How did you start working together? I said, I want to do a show with you. He's a jewelry maker. He was kind of wait and see. We did an incredible photo shoot. After like 15 days, I sent him the first painting, and he changed his vision of who I was. Then I started to promote him on Instagram, and he started to get a lot of attention. It takes time to integrate into a community. I paint Lyle's cousin Ray, too. Sometimes I see guys at the gas station filling their tank, and I'm like, oh my God, you'd be so good. But I can't just go, hey, dude, a white guy like me, I'd be introduced in the right way to be accepted and understood. I'm just trying to do my thing. And people come my way at some point. Your clouds are intense. To me, they represent nature and the force of nature, and it brings a tension to the painting that you wouldn't have with blue sky. Clouds in the composition are a character that brings something to the painting and adds to the story. You've been compared to Henry Farney, Frank Kenneth Johnson, Maynard Dixon, Howard Post. To whom do you relate most? I've studied more Remington and Dixon and the Taos Society. Contemporary Western painters come out to the West and find themselves exposed to these huge red rocks and sunsets and clouds and long shadows. And it's just mind-blowing to be a painter. For them, it was 100 years ago. And for us, it's now. Then and now. And always. What is the source of the seeming timelessness in your painting? There's a universal look to a cowboy, denim, western shirt, and a vest. I've done a few historical works and like doing them, but I also like the idea of romanticizing the West. of course not in a cheesy way, but in the beautiful version of the American West and the positive part of it, the relationship to nature. It is definitely something that comes out of American history and what this place was before barbed wire and how incredible it must have been. I like that angle. Either I paint American Indians or I paint cowboys. That's where I'm at most of the time. I create iconic images, a painting of a guy, a horse, a hat, a sunset, the timeless, iconic image. Rising star, Penelope Joe. Talent, moxie, and Navajo culture come together in W.D. Ranch's exciting new collaboration. Story by Hallie Sanford. Photography by Mitchell Franz. On the fashion frontier, collaboration is king right now, or in this case, queen. While you'll see a lot of industry's major players teaming up with already well-known names, country couture powerhouse W.D. Ranch is providing a platform for a fresher face. To us, talent is talent. And if yours aligns with our aesthetic, then we're interested in having a conversation about collaborating, says W.D. Ranch Creative Director Cheryl McMillan. We do work with some big names who already have a reputation and a repertoire. I mean, Oscar Betts is a lapidary legend. But Penelope Joe has that heart and hunger that you only find in young visionaries, eager to make their The 20-year-old self-taught artist is the embodiment of carpe diem with a canvas. Penelope was born and raised and still lives on the Navajo Reservation near the Petrified Forest in Arizona, where chores are ample and luxuries are scarce. Her home didn't have electricity until she was 13 and currently still does not have running water. But for Penelope, an environment low on technology was ideal for cultivating creativity. Starting from when I was about 4 or 5, after my uncles came in from working, we would all have dinner, she recalls. Then after dinner, we'd clean off the table and they'd bring out a whole box of crayons, colored pencils, markers, dump it all on the table and burn out paper. We would sketch and draw every night. I wasn't attached to the TV and I wasn't on social media. I didn't get on social media until people encouraged me to put my art online. By the time her home got electricity, Penelope had already conquered her first art contest. I was 12 years old when I entered my first art show, the Gallup Intertribal Indian Ceremonial, she says, and my painting in first place. By the time I decided I was definitely going to enter, I only had 1 week to complete that painting. Storytelling of the creation of horses. She has a propensity for seizing opportunities, and where they don't exist, she creates them. That's how she ended up one of the youngest artists ever admitted to the widely renowned Santa Fe Indian Market. I sent my application every year, even knowing I was too young to enter, she says. I wanted them to know my name by the time I was eligible. And then, when I was 18, I got the letter, and I was able to announce it at my high school graduation dinner. That's also how Penelope found herself in creative codes with W.D. Ranch. She simply had the tenacity to ask. Our first time teaming up with Penelope was for a photo shoot and feature in our fall 2021 Grand Canyon catalog, McMillan says. She actually contacted us wanting to model. She was so earnest and genuine, and as you might imagine, we admire a girl with moxie. We were impressed with the way she presented herself and her goal to change the narrative around the relationship between Native American artisans and the Western fashion world, and that she wanted to be the one to do it. Penelope felt compelled to be a first-hand representative of the Navajo people, one actually living the rituals and reservation life, and demonstrate that rather than collide, the cultures could coincide and collaborate, and people could learn from each other and mutually benefit. W.D. Ranch is doing something different, which I think more of these clothing companies should do, by asking indigenous artists to be part of these Native American designs, Penelope says. Most of my art design that I did with DDR has meaning in my culture. In particular, she was able to share her horse symbols. Growing up, she says, all she had was her artwork and her horses. In Diné culture, horses hold a special place and have a central place in Penelope's art. Now her designs play a central role in DDR's Chili Patin collection, the third installment of the Fall-Winter 2022 Scrapbooks collection, named for a fictional art alter ego from McMillan's childhood. Its rich leather, intricate embellishments and embroidery, fringe and fur, and it has a strong Southwestern influence presented in bold black bases, complemented by earthy autumn and terracotta tones. As both an indigenous artist and a native to that region of the country, Penelope was the ideal candidate for collaboration on Chili Patin. This collaboration is the biggest honor of my life, Penelope says. I've been working towards this since I was 11 years old. I wanted to know where art would take me. Now, I'm collaborating with Double D Ranch, one of the biggest high-end Western clothing companies. Chili Patin is an amazing collection, and I'm very thankful for this opportunity. Double D Ranch is thrilled with the collaboration, too. There's an authenticity to Penelope's artistic style that is evident, that has passed down through generations. McMillan says, her talent is her own, and I can picture her cultivating it alongside her uncles. There is so much tradition and culture that comes through in her aesthetic, and being deeply ingrained in her Navajo roots aligns her with Southwestern style in a unique way. We're honored to be part of what is sure to be a resplendent career for her. The collaboration is the source of great pride for Penelope. There were some very tough times for me growing up as a child, not having a normal life like most other kids have in America, she says. Here on the reservation, you have to work harder. Just getting ready in the morning, you have to warm hot water to take a shower. You have to haul water every other day. You're always on this hunt for many Coleman kerosene lamps because you don't have light at night to do your work. Many people along the way have helped me since I was a little baby. My mom, my Uncle Ryan, Grandpa Vincent, telling me you can do anything. And now I'm here sharing my designs with the Western fashion world. Having my artwork presented on a national scale is the biggest achievement of my life as a young Diné Navajo artist. I can't wait for that moment to sit back and see my art at a rodeo or on social media with a Western influencer wearing DDR clothing and say, I was part of that collaboration.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading from True West Magazine, History of the American Frontier, January 2023 edition. We'll continue True West's edition with Best of the West 2023. Best of the West 2023, Art and Collectibles, by Steve Friesen and the editors of True West. Best of the True and Mythical West at auctions in 2022. Collectors proved they have the dollars to keep auction houses hammering out record prices. People often remark that America has a short history compared to Europe. It doesn't matter. The American West excites the imagination like no other period in world history. Whether called the Old West, the Wild West, or the True West, people over the world are captivated by it. It is no wonder that art and artifacts associated with both true and mythical tales of the West's past continued to draw attention at auctions in 2022. The year began in January with a sale of memorabilia from the West's mythmakers at Brian Level's Old West Auction in Mesa, Arizona. There were cowboy hats from Tom Mix, John Wayne, and Charles Russell. Italian actress Claudia Cardinale, whose hat was also sold at the LaBelle auction, starred in Once Upon a Time in the West, a movie that unabashedly borrowed its title from fairy tales and inspired other movies with similar titles. In May, the Rock Island Premier Firearms Auction sold a pair of Remington revolvers presented to Ulysses S. Grant, who oversaw the handling of the Indian War on the Great Plains, and a Colt Navy revolver that belonged to Wild Bill Hickok. The gaming set that belonged to Poker Alice, who became famous as a female gambler, was sold at the Morphy Extraordinary Firearms Auction. Grant, Hickok, and Poker Alice all walked out of the real West into the cinema of the imaginary West. Later in the year, a purely fictional firearm, used by Han Solo in a Wild West long ago and far away, sold at a Rock Island auction for over $1 million. Art that captured both the reality and the myth of the West loomed large throughout the year. The Scottsdale Art Auction featured impressions of the West created by members of the Taos Society of Artists, as well as by contemporary artists. Among the new works of art depicting a West of the imagination were Howard Terping's The Shaman and His Magic Feathers, and Logan Maxwell Hedges' All the West That Remains. The National Cowboy and Western Museum's Pre-De West addressed a reality too often left out of the mythical West by awarding its Great American Cowboy Award to two Americans of the Old West. Created by Thomas Blackshear II, it portrays two African-American cowboys. Depictions of the Old West by Russell, Remington, and Alfred Jacob Miller, all of whom experienced it, appeared on the block at the Coeur d'Alene Art Auction, commanding hefty prices. As might be expected, the top earners at the C.M. Russell Museum's annual auction were by Charles Russell. They included his High, Wide, and Handsome, which illustrated a Bronco rider at an early 20th century Western show. The buffalo once dominated the country and has become a symbol of the American West. Images of the buffalo dominated Fall's Rendezvous Royale auction in Cody. Top earner at that auction was Tucker Smith's Wyoming Buffalo. At the Jackson Hole Art Auction, Frederick Remington's Register Rock, Idaho, effectively captured the intersection of landscape, pioneers, and American Indians. Western imagery, as reflected by examples of Western-style furniture by Thomas Molesworth and others, also commanded high prices at the Jackson auction. In 2022, collectors had plenty of opportunities to purchase a piece of the Western story, whether real or imaginary, and they did indeed. These sales represented the broad reach of the West, as well as mythic qualities. There is no question the American West looms large in the world's imagination. Best Western Art Collection, C.M. Russell Museum, Great Falls, Montana. The museum that houses Charles M. Russell's home and studio has always been true to Russell's vision. Russell would have been moved by the Sundance series, Gary Schlitt's 42 paintings of the Blackfeet Medicine Lodge ceremony, in an exhibit that ran from November 12, 2022 to May 22, 2022. Russell, modest yet masterful, small-scale masterworks by Charles M. Russell, runs through September and reveals that he didn't need a large canvas to touch viewers, and the permanent exhibits are among the best you'll find anywhere. Online, cmrussell.org. Reader's Choice, Museum of Western Art, Kerrville, Texas. Best American Indian Collection, Eddie Basha Collection Museum, Chandler, Arizona. Developed by the late Arizona grocer and philanthropist Eddie Basha, the Eddie Basha Collection Museum is home to more than 3,500 pieces of American Indian and contemporary Western American art, housed in the Zelma Basha Salmery Gallery. Online, eddiebashacollection.com. Reader's Choice, First Americans Museum, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Best Western Art Collector, Tim Peterson, Cape Cod, Massachusetts, Scottsdale's Museum of the West. Renowned and highly respected Western art collector Tim Peterson
developed a passion for the West and Western art during his childhood in the Midwest. Today, Peterson's family collection is on loan at Western Spirit. Scottsdale's Museum of the West showcased in the second floor Courage and Crossroads, a visual journey through the early American West exhibition. Peterson also recently collaborated with the museum to exhibit his Paul Calais collection in Life of Exploration, From the Mountains to the Moon, his Maynard Dixon collection in Maynard Dixon's American West, and his Edward Curtis collection in Light and Legacy, The Art and Techniques of Edward Curtis. Online, ScottsdaleMuseumWest.org. Reader's Choice, Jimmy Morris, Ancient Ozarks Natural History Museum, Ridgeway, Missouri. Best Western History Collector, Richard E. Fike, Montrose, Colorado, Museum of the Mountain West. Founded in 1997, the Colorado Museum was created by founder Richard E. Fike, a Western historian, archaeologist, and lifelong collector of Western memorabilia. Fike dreamed for decades of a center dedicated to the preservation of frontier heritage. In addition to the museum's exhibits, the grounds of the Museum of the Mountain West have 28 historic buildings that were donated by neighboring community members. Online, museumofthemountainwest.com. Reader's Choice, Johnny Morris, Ancient Ozarks Natural History Museum, Ridgeway, Missouri. Best Pioneer History Collection, Cowtown, Wichita, Kansas. Old Cowtown Museum has 54 historic and recreated buildings, 27 of which are original. Built along the Arkansas River in Wichita, the museum is a popular living history center with an outstanding 1860s to 70s frontier collection. Visitors will step back in time when they enter each building, furnished with historic pieces and materials that provide a window into life for Kansas pioneers. Online, oldcowtown.org. Reader's Choice, Panhandle Plains Historical Museum, Canyon, Texas. Best Old West Collectibles Auction, Morphy Auctions, Denver, Pennsylvania. Internationally recognized for its annual collectible auctions, Morphy has five collectible divisions: Advertising and General Store, Automobilia and Petroliana, Coin-Op and Gambling, Fine and Decorative Arts, and Toy and Doll. The company is also well known for its edged weapons, armor and militia, and firearms auctions. Collectors can find hundreds of items from the Old West in the annual auctions. One of their largest and most successful was the Peerless Bobby Knudsen Jr. collection of Petroliana and Soda Pop signs in 2022. Online, MorphyAuctions.com. Reader's Choice, Brian Lebel's Old West Show and Auction, New Mexico and Arizona. Best Western Collectibles Gallery, Cowboy Legacy Gallery, Scottsdale, Arizona. Over 100 nationally known artists are represented by Legacy Gallery, which has been in business since 1988. Legacy Gallery offers the finest in representational and impressionistic art. The popular gallery's ownership is highly regarded for their diversity of art and artists, and variety of subject matter and mediums, including Western, wildlife, figurative, landscape, and still life. They represent for their customers. Online, LegacyGallery.com. Reader's Choice, C.M. Russell Museum, Great Falls, Montana. Best Old West Art Collection, Scottsdale Art Collection, Scottsdale, Arizona. The annual Scottsdale Art Auction, held online on April 9th and 10th, offered an outstanding selection of over 400 oil paintings, watercolors, sketches, and sculptures depicting Western landscapes, peoples, and action. It included a broad range of styles, from traditional scenes of the West to adventurous works by later 20th and early 21st century artists. And with the range of prices from a John Clymer charcoal at $936 to Charles
Shriv Vogel's A Close Call at $819,000. There were Western images to meet nearly every budget. The Scottsdale Art Auction is currently accepting consignments and will hold its next auction on April 14th and 15th, 2023. Online, scottsdaleartauction.com. Reader's Choice, Heritage Auctions, Dallas, Texas. Best Old West Firearms Auction, Rock Island Auctions, Rock Island, Illinois. Rock Island Auction Company is known worldwide as the top auction house for antique and collector firearms. Rock Island prides itself on the integrity and the quality and rarity of the antique firearms collector's firearms, rare guns, modern guns, and other firearms-related items auctioned since 2003. Annual events include Premier Firearms Auction, Sporting and Collector Firearms, and 9 regularly scheduled online firearms auctions. Online, rockislandauction.com. Reader's Choice, Amoskag Auction Company, Manchester, New Hampshire. Best Treasure Hunting Device, Garrett Metal Detectors, Texas. Founded in 1964, the family-owned company remains a leader in the metal detector marketplace. The company's philosophy is to make the best metal detectors, sell them at a fair and reasonable price, and place customer service and satisfaction at the top of their priorities. For the everyday customer, its sports division offers amateur and professional detectorists one of the most highly regarded product lines manufactured today. Online, Garrett.com. Reader's Choice, Electroscopes by Thomas, South Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Best Western Painter, Maynard Dixon. True West editors believe that you might make a case that there are better painters, but in the end, Maynard Dixon is the West's greatest artist. He made the transition from early 20th century illustration to modern contemporary Western art with integrity and authenticity. Reader's Choice, Charles M. Russell. Best Western Painter Living, Logan Maxwell Hajej. Born and raised in Southern California, Logan Maxwell Hajej became one of the most respected young Western artists. He splits his time between Los Angeles and a rural isolated studio cabin in Arizona. Hajej, a contemporary artist recently featured at Western Spirit, Scottsdale's Museum of the West, is well known for his contemporary Western art that features Southwestern American Indians, cowboys, and Brooklyn Bronx, and landscapes. Art critics have compared the award-winning artist to Maynard Dixon and Ed Mell. Online, LoganMaxwellHajej.com. Reader's Choice, Sherry Blanchard Stewart, John Hampton. Best Western Art Museum Gallery, Olaf Weichhorst Museum and Heritage Center, El Cajon, California. After visiting the transplanted Denmark artist's home, David Kahane wrote in the San Diego Reader, January 26th, that he felt in touch with the lost Old West. The house, which was the artist's home from 1947 until 1958, is just part of the museum that features the art of Weichhorst, 1899 to 1988, whose paintings were used in the opening credits of John Wayne's El Dorado, 1967. Weichhorst also played the Swedish gunsmith in the film. Online, weichhorstmuseum.org. Reader's Choice, Taos Art Museum, Taos, New Mexico. Best Western Art Gallery, Bighorn Galleries, Cody, Wyoming. World famous for an extraordinary gallery of Western and wildlife art and landscapes of the West, Bighorn Galleries was founded in 1982 in downtown Cody, across from the historic Irma Hotel. The Bighorn represents local and Western artists, two- and three-dimensional art, as well as jewelry and original graphics. It also has a gallery in Tubac, Arizona. Online, bighorngalleries.com. Reader's Choice, Medicine Man Gallery, Tucson, Arizona. Best Western Bronze Foundry, Art Castings of Colorado, Loveland, Colorado. Founded in 1972, Art Castings is a major part of Loveland's thriving art community. The Casting Foundry is located in a 25,000-square-foot building, and the extraordinarily large space allows artists crafting oversized monument bronzes and the Art Castings team to work inside year-round. Public tours are available by reservation only on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 9:30 a.m. Online, artcastings.com. Reader's Choice, Bronze Smith Fine Art Foundry and Gallery. Best Western Bronze Artist, Dustin Payne. The native New Mexican is known for his portrayal of Western history in bronze sculpture. With his traditional style, Payne encapsulates the feeling and detail of the Western way of life. Dustin was born into a rodeo and ranching family in southern New Mexico in 1981. Growing up as a third-generation sculptor in his family, he began learning the trade at an early age. Endless inspiration came from studying the great works of Remington and Russell, and he was influenced by the books and drawings of Will James. Online, DustinPayne.com. Reader's Choice, Herb Migory. Best Classic Western Bronze Artist, George Phippen. Born in 1915 in Charles City, Iowa, George Phippen grew up cowboying in Kansas before he moved to Arizona. As one of the founders of Cowboy Artists of America, Phippen is well known for both his paintings and his bronze sculptures of Western cowboy life. The Phippen Art Museum in Prescott, Arizona is home to the greatest collection of the cowboy's artwork. Online, phippenartmuseum.org. Reader's Choice, Arthur Putnam. Best Western Museum, National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Coulter's Hell, Yellowstone Park at 150, is a special exhibit at the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum this year. It features art from the Cowboy Museum collection, as well as items borrowed from other institutions, including the Gilcrease Museum. On National Root Beer Float Day, August 6th, kids took over the museum for their own exploration of Yellowstone, looking for animals in the artwork during a scavenger hunt and seeing a geyser in action. Among the exhibits opening late this year and on into 2023 are Looking Into the Windows of the West, Art of the Northwest Coast, and Sombreros Texanas, Bosses of the Plains, Cowboy Hats from the Permanent Collection. Online, nationalcowboymuseum.org. Reader's Choice, Western Spirit, Scottsdale's Museum of the West, Scottsdale, Arizona. Truest Magazine, January 2023 edition. Shooting Photographs and Bullets by Mark Boardman. C.F. Flive's brief career as a lawman makes a sorry tale. In 1894, C.S. Buck Fly decided to take on a new challenge. The famed tombstone photographer ran for Cochise County Sheriff and won. Just why he sought the office isn't known. Maybe he craved the excitement. Perhaps it offered him more money than taking pictures did. But the job wasn't what he thought. He got an inkling of that in early 1895, when he led an unsuccessful effort to capture the robbers who stuck up a train outside Wilcox. After that, things were quiet for a few months, and then came the events that ended Fly's law enforcement career. On August 6th, 1895, the High Fives, an outlaw gang led by Black Jack Will Christian, hit the bank in Nogales. They actually dropped the money on the way out, but the outfit had pulled a number of successful jobs in Arizona. Lawmen headed for them. Originally, three posses sought the High Fives. One of them was led by Sheriff Buck Fly. Another was headed by Pima County Sheriff Robert Leatherwood. The two, and later the third, merged on August 11th. But not until after Fly and company had arrested and jailed an innocent man. The outlaws split up, and the Leatherwood Fly posse followed three of the wanted men. On August 11th, the lawmen approached the entrance to Skeleton Canyon, about 30 miles northeast of Douglas, Arizona Territory. The manhunters were careless and rode into an ambush. Posseman Frank Robson was fatally shot. Another man was wounded, and two of their horses were killed. The outlaws kept the lawmen pinned down until dark, when they looted Robson's body of guns and ammunition and then rode off. Hours later, when they were sure the coast was clear, the posse followed suit. Over the next 6 weeks, members of the High Fives were spotted in various locales of New Mexico and Arizona territories, as well as Mexico. C.S. Fly kept raising posses to go after the miscreants, but they never spotted their quarry. By late September, Fly had gone back to Tombstone and resumed the daily grind of a local lawman, mostly collecting taxes and maintaining some sort of order. If Fly had dreams of glory, they were shot down by his inability to arrest Christian and company, and by leading his men into an ambush. It should be noted that by this time, Fly had a significant drinking problem that was well known in the community. Just what role his alcoholism played in his decision is unclear, but by November 1896, Fly decided not to seek re-election. When he left office the next January, he went back to photography, but perhaps out of embarrassment, he moved the business to Bisbee. True West Magazine, January 2023 edition. Fast Draws, Red Clouds, and Wild Rags by Marshall Trimble. Ask the Marshal. Question. Did Chief Red Cloud have anything to do with the death of Crazy Horse? Joe Manriquez, Whittier, California. Red Cloud was among the Indian leaders who unwittingly contributed to Crazy Horse's death. They were manipulated by U.S. government agents and military leaders to destroy the man who was among the greatest Indian leaders of all time. Older chiefs like Red Cloud and Spotted Tail had earned their powerful positions through leadership in war and statesmanship in peace, and they were accustomed to the honor accorded them. But that power and authority brought pride and jealousy, especially when the circumstances of confinement to a reservation and dependency on the enemy government for their people's subsistence eroded that power and the ability to serve them as expected of a chief. This is what the government agents and the military leaders played on as a means to destroy all those chiefs, for that was the first step to destroying the tribes themselves. With his courageous resistance and his refusal to accept confinement to a reservation, Crazy Horse had become famous worldwide and a continuing inspiration to Indian people of all tribes. He had to be imprisoned or destroyed, according to the makers of Indian policy and the army generals. And who better to do it than his own people? Question. I read that Wyatt Earp said that Doc Holliday was the fastest gun he had ever seen. But he also said Buckskin Frank Leslie was as fast as Doc. Was he right? Michael Clark, St. Louis, Missouri. I ran this by author Roy Young, and he replied, "Oh, questions like this, it's basically who do you trust, or what writer do you trust? Unless Doc and Leslie were in a shooting contest, how could Wyatt possibly know? Just by watching them individually draw on the occasion of a gunfight? Well, what gunfight? Or target practice? No, Wyatt's opinion was all over the place, all of the time." Question. I ran across your article, The Bobo Kumari Ranch. you wrote in 1827, Don Ignacio Elias Gonzalez and his wife, Dona Eulalia Elias Gonzalez, requested a grant of 8 sitos. A sito was 1 square league, or 4,338,464 acres. Who had the authority to issue such a grant? David Thane, Prescott, Arizona. From 1821 until the Gadsden Purchase of 1854, the Mexican government sold and awarded granted land under Mexico's 1824 Law of Colonization, which called for a 3-year abandonment clause, and the new owners were expected to mark the boundaries with monuments. The abandonment clause meant if the grantee abandoned the land for 3 years, he could lose it. Dona Eulalia Elias de Gonzalez and her brother, Don Ignacio Elias, purchased the land in 1832